Good afternoon. I hope that you are all, that we are all more and more settling in, finding the paths through this labyrinth of a campus that lead to the places we are going, finding each other in the dining hall amidst all of the bustling companions of ours here. This gathering is something new for our order, because in the past, mostly when we've met in the summer, it's been on a hilltop or in a forest. Now we're meeting in a city. And so we're challenged to realize the ideal of Khilwat Dar Anjuman, to use an old expression, that is to say, to be alone amidst the crowd. But alone not in the sense of oblivious to the presence of one another, not in the sense of apathy and indifference. Alone in the sense of coming so close in the spirit that you are I. That kind of aloneness, which is the divine unity in our midst. I am you. You are I. We find the one alone in everyone that we meet. So I'm very glad that we can be here together and gather in this way. Our paths through life go in many directions, but when from time to time these paths all intersect, we're reminded of the caravan, we're reminded of our own vocation as travelers, we're reminded of the destination. And there's renewal in this, renewal of the spirit. Our themes these days are elementary ones, the principles of the path. And some of you have been coming and listening and speaking for many years, maybe many decades. And yet, perhaps you would agree that the elements of the path remain elements of the path from the first day to the last day. These themes are timeless from beginning to end. And the path is a spiral that returns us again and again to what is most essential. Therefore, if you think as I do, there is no weariness in contemplating the most foundational, the most elementary principles, because every turn of the spiral takes us ever deeper into what we have always known. And in this way, we have reflected on the path of purification. Purification of the body, purification of the breath, leading on to purification of the mind. Now the subject of purification can be both inspiring and intimidating. It's inspiring because it's always inspiring to be reminded of one's heart's ideal, how one might live with fidelity, what beauty is possible to realize in action, in word and in thought. Consciously or unconsciously, we all long for beauty. And the possession of things of beauty is only one step toward what we really want. What is really wanted is more than the nearness of a beautiful object. We want greater nearness to beauty. We want that beauty so near it's within our own mind, within our own heart. And so the subject of purification inspires us, attracts us. But at the same time, there is apprehension. What demands will this path make upon me? Am I ready to meet such demands? Do I have it in me? One hesitates knowing well the multitude of distractions, temptations, intoxications that surround us, and familiar with one's own limitations. One hesitates. I'm asked on the path of purification to go forward, to achieve the ideal, to attain control of my own mind and speak only what is beautiful, do deeds of kindness to attain a seemingly supernatural state of being. Is this within my power? One shrinks back and hesitates until it dawns. Yet our participation, even our fiat, accept that great power that is available to all who avail themselves of it, that is needed of us. Just as a sailor must raise the sail and turn it this way and that to steer a course, but the power in the sail comes from the wind. It isn't of the sailor's own creation. Our work is to spread the sail, catch the wind, and adjust our anatomy, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual, to fully partake of that force which is the wind at our backs. And what is this wind at our back? In the language of Moshe, it is the spirit of guidance. Moshe says, the spirit of guidance is the yeast that is used to make bread. So let us first of all acknowledge that we are hungry. Not only our bodies are hungry, our hearts are hungry. Not only the body needs sustenance, the heart needs nourishment. And when that hunger is very great, the heart will eat anything it can find, just as a starving man will consume dirt, dry grass, bark, just something to fill the stomach. But it doesn't satisfy, it doesn't nourish. Too often we are like this in the world. The heart is hungry. It's looking for nourishment. It takes and eats what it can, but there is so much that will not feed it, and the hunger goes on. One could eat dirt all day long, day after day, and only become hungrier and hungrier. We're looking for bread. And the seeds have been given. And the soil is there, and there's sunshine and rain. But those seeds have to be planted. The plants, the crops, brought up, protected from extremes, given to flower and to fructify. There must be a garnering, a threshing, and then from the grain is cooked that bread which alone will feed, will nourish the heart. And it's cooked with a special ingredient, a yeast that raises it, that expands it. Yeast, that is the spirit of guidance. Otherwise, the bread is flat, it has no fullness. The yeast brings that fullness, it brings breath into the bread. That's what the spirit of guidance does in our life. Brings an expansion of mind, an expansion of heart, presence of fresh air. The spirit of guidance has been active since the dawn of creation. The sun, the dawn of creation, the light of the whole universe, the fulfillment of God's purpose. As soon as there was creation, there was divine mind running through everything. You might call it the self-organizing principle, the evolutionary thrust. You may call it revelation. I call it the divine self-disclosure. Purposefulness working out its destiny in the cosmos since the very beginning. Therefore, the universe is a book of guidance, the great holy scripture, the mother of the book. Every being belonging to this universe is a word in a verse that declares the guidance that is intended for every soul. The Earth's own blossoming into efflorescence is a work of guidance. And human history shows the signs of this guidance, punctuated, however, again and again by forgetting, distraction. And yet the message returns, guidance is renewed. It works through inspired minds, reveals itself in the arts and the sciences, and its fullest expression functions through the soul of the prophet, a soul that is a clear channel through which that guidance that is everywhere and always registers in the human condition. It filters through the prophet's mind, reverberates in the prophet's speech, prophet or prophetess, thereby answering human language, meeting the human mind where it is. Over the centuries, the human mind unfurls in different directions. Each civilization has brought forth another note in the music of humanity's saga. Therefore, every articulation of this message of guidance has a particularity that is distinct. And if one occupies oneself solely with the external distinctions, it is quite possible to inner trajectory of the guidance of the message itself. To see only the parts and miss the whole. To cling to one form, disavow all others, and thereby to miss the point. Because guidance flows, and whenever an attempt is made to seize upon it, to clutch it in one's hands as a piece of property to be possessed, it cannot be guidance anymore. A living thing becomes a dead thing. So the work of the saints and masters has always been to revive the freshness, the suppleness of the guidance which comes from the dawn of time. Hence, traditions have come down, lineages of grace, wisdom, and illumination. These are caravans wending their course toward the goal. And one is fortunate to find such a caravan. There is not only one. Some souls are intended for this one, another for that one. It would be ridiculous to claim that only one congregation of seekers holds in its hands the truth. But when one finds such a caravan, and in doing so one finds home, or the path to home, there is a guidance that is confirmed because it verifies a guidance that one already has discovered in the course of one's days on earth. If one had no prior guidance, if one had no perceptions, no openings, no intuitions of the horizon, then coming face to face with a caravan, coming into contact with the voice of the message, would leave one unmoved. It moves you only because it resonates, it confirms what your soul already knows. And where there is that confirmation, there is blessing upon blessing. One is not so alone anymore. One can journey now in company. Although of frictions along the way. Lessons in all of it, always learning to do, if that is one's attitude. There's not a single situation in this world that does not contain a teaching for us. As long as we are seeking to be taught, which is to say, looking for guidance, which is to say, listening to the spirit of guidance, because the spirit of guidance is always speaking. The question is only, when are we listening? When are we not listening? At a time like this, I feel that there's great receptivity. Look at this space, it invites openness of mind, openness of heart. We're gathered here with a clear intention. We've come to study, to aspire, to remember. But then afterward, we drive home, and along the way, maybe someone juts in on your lane. Now, are you as ready to listen for the spirit of guidance then as you are now? That would be the question. But being ready now prepares one to be ready then, as long as one keeps up the intention to keep the inner life and the outer life as close together as possible, that they may more and more converge in one life. And the spirit of guidance is always speaking, and we are always listening. Spirit of guidance comes to us through the signs of nature, through the voice of the prophets and prophetesses, especially when we accept adoption by them. By which I mean to say, as we progress through life, we come into different alignments with the spiritual hierarchy, which may be conceived of as akin to the orderings of the stars. As the earth moves, the position of the stars changes. As we go through life, beings of guidance loom in upon us. And there is a synchronicity between outer events and inner revelations. When our inner life and outer life converge, so it is that we may find ourselves under the tutelage of a certain angel, a certain prophet. Speed. seems. A personality of the inner world. A being who has, like oneself, lived upon earth a life of limitation, but who offered up that life to the One and became a channel for the divine work, a being in whom certain divine names have functioned with a clarity that is recognizable and that clearly reminds those who witness this embodiment of the names themselves on the horizon and in their very selves. Such beings have existed all through human history, and those who lived only for themselves leave no resplendent legacy on earth afterward, but those who lived in service serve on, many do, and create an ongoing sphere of communication between the within and the without. There are many beings, invisible beings, who are present to this world, beneficial, who are appointed conduits of the divine guidance, and who work in harmony with living trustees of that same cause. So the discovery of guidance enters us into congruence with the spiritual hierarchy, the sum of the angels, the messengers, the prophets, saints and masters, who are in their totality the personification of the spirit of guidance. All the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the spirit of guidance. And our own process of ascent and spiritual discovery will draw us into the awareness of their ranks. And in this way, inspiration is given. It's given in the measure of our reverent vigilance and dedication to service. As great as the purpose for which we choose to live, so much inspiration will be given toward that end. If one's chosen purpose is narrow, the available inspiration is accordingly limited. But to the degree that one pledges oneself in fealty to the spirit of guidance, it comes. Now, how does it come? It doesn't come mechanically. It doesn't come with the press of a button. It works mysteriously and contravenes sometimes logic. It may sweep aside all of our rational arguments. This is not to say that the rational mind has no role to play. It does. But the work of the mind is to serve the imperative of the heart. And when the heart is subordinated to the imperative of the mind, all goes awry. So inspiration must come first, and then the mind is a wonderful servant. It fulfills the mandate of the heart dutifully when its direction comes from the source. So, the path requires of us that we learn to listen and it is necessary, first of all, that there should be trust, there should be faith. If there is doubt, then what is to be given cannot be given because there is no sound vessel to receive it. The sound vessel is faith. And we can realize this faith through a deep contemplation of the nature of reality itself, the study of the universe, the contemplation of the inner story of our own lives and how we've been brought through despair when all seemed lost, how looking back in everything there was a learning. It's easier to see retrospectively, but now, confronted with a tribulation, we see only a threat. But when we look back, yes, it's there, the hidden hand. We were not alone, we've never been alone. Sees this clearly, then the beneficence of reality itself will clarify its truth in our minds and hearts. And that beneficence does not contradict the brokenness of the world. There's great pain in our experience, terrible suffering in the world, great calamities. Our contemplation is not an exercise in naivete and the repression of the acknowledgement of the unexplainable. And yet, it is a truth of history that those who have plunged into the deepest mysteries of creation have returned not as hopeless cynics, but as voices of the victorious love at the heart of all things. It isn't only the bias of one culture or a certain school of thought. It is a universal realization of the deepest explorers of the human condition, of all ages and all times. And at the center of it all, there is a mystery whose beneficence kindles love, awe, trust, and the flowering of the qualities that flow from this profound acknowledgement of beneficence. Kindness, patience, mercy. When we, through contemplation, through meditation, more and more deeply, not only in our rational minds, but in the cells of our body, in the inner cockles of our heart, when we confirm this knowledge, then arises the vessel, the necessary vessel for inspiration. That bowl of trust, trusting what is to be given will be given. And one goes on knocking at the door, not dissuaded if the answer doesn't come immediately. Go on knocking, because inspiration does not come with the click of a button. It comes when it comes, and it is only for us to be ready for it when it comes. Then we move on distractedly, and there it is, but don't see it. Stay awake, listen for it. It doesn't require that you abandon responsibility for your affairs, that you expect a supernatural force to swoop down and make everything right. It means only that at the horizon of one's contrivances, there is a spaciousness, and one looks there, listens there. Yes, do what is to be done in your sphere of influence, fulfill your duties, make plans as plans are needed. But there's a horizon beyond those plans. Let that boundary be a porous one. Keep looking there to see what's coming, what's emerging. Be ready to respond and not to fall back upon prior assumptions. So often, guidance is missed because our existing categories are so rigid. There's no accommodation for what's coming through. It simply won't fit, so it comes and goes. So the spirit of guidance brings a knowledge that requires in us a certain suppleness. because there are so many hard contours in the mind, and those are the repetitive, routine worries and anxious broodings that keep reasserting ourselves and crowding out this finer, subtler flow of insight. And so thinking hard won't draw to us the guidance that we need. We can't force the conclusion. Although it sometimes happens that the exertion of mind carried to its conclusion through intense mental exertion leads on to a kind of exhaustion of the mind that is conducive to guidance. So you press your mind as far as it will go, tabulate every consideration, draw up charts, leave nothing unaccounted for, compare innumerable scenarios, push your mind to its limits, and then release, unclench. It might come in repose of meditation. It might come in repose of sleep. It might come after a long day on the phone, on Skype, typing up messages, worried, trying to think things through. There seems no avenue forward. And then close the door and go outside, resolve to give no more thought to it. Just walk through the trees. There's fresh air. The birds are chirping. Breathing. Breathing well. You come back and sit down at your desk. I know exactly what to do now. Sometimes it comes in the night, in dreams, or in something that is not quite a dream, but it is in the waking state. The mind is exhausted after puzzling over something. Close your eyes, go to sleep. It may happen in the middle of the night or in the early morning. Something is shown. So be attentive when you wake up. It's a crucial time, first thing in the morning. And one has the habit of leaping up and rushing off to attend the affairs of the day. But if one could pause just at that moment, just recall, was anything given in the night? It doesn't require an extensive perusal of all of the shifting images and kind of bewildered and reflection on what all of this might mean. Just see, is there a simple sign? Don't agonize over the mystery of garbled dreams that are very often little more than mental indigestion. And yet in the midst of all of that, sometimes in the night, there is something which is vision. And lost in the jumble of confused impressions or overlooked in the morning when one leaps up. So be on the lookout for signs. And if one is a traveler in a caravan that descends from the lineage of grace which has come down from prophetic revelation through the prophets and the masters and the saints, then one is following an initiatic path. The Niati Order is an initiatic path, and one has the benefit of a guide. That relationship is extremely important. And it is a confirmation of the principle with which I began, that this work is not merely ours to do on our own, pulling oneself up by one's bootstraps. Grace comes down. There's a lineage, there is a spiritual hierarchy, there's a whole movement of guidance that works to the degree that we make ourselves receptive. And if one enters into it argumentatively, confirmed in the opinion that only one's existing presuppositions have validity, then there's no necessity to enter into an initiatic path at all, because one is already well satisfied with one's own opinions as they now stand. Then better remain in the satisfaction of those judgments. But if one seeks to see beyond, to grow and transform, then what is needed is a certain receptivity. And what a blessing it is to have the chance to sit face to face with someone who can see your face. And we can see our feet and our legs and hands and arms and even chest. We can't see our own face. Hence the guide comes and sees your face and is a mirror to you. This is not someone to order you about and tell you what to do. It's someone whose heart is to be a mirror for you and to give you what would be perhaps presumptuous for you to take yourself. If one is seated at the table, one never likes to serve oneself. It's always nicer if someone serves you and you serve that person. There's grace in that. And so it is in the sacred tradition. Rather than taking a name to recite, this guide looks into you and speaks a name for you to recite, and in that there is a bond between both of you, which is a beautiful thing in the life of both, because our learnings are never in isolation. That's how the spirit of guidance works, through the interdependence and kinship of all beings. So it's natural that we travel together, that we work through a lineage, that we work with the wisdom that has been passed down generation after generation. It is newly conceived. It links us up with a heritage, with an electric charge, as Moshe described it. It's like plugging a device into a wall. That device comes alive because it's linked to an electric charge which is flowing from a generative source. So guidance comes in this way. And to receive it requires a certain openness, a certain humility, a certain reverence on our parts. And when that is there, great things can be received, and then the inspiration will come that shows us the way to live for that purpose for which we have been born. A criterion of inspiration is that it takes one beyond the bounds of a separate self. It always is in the service of the whole. Inspiration is that which leads us beyond the primitive preoccupation with what is only for our own sake, and leads us to that which is for the sake of all, which is, in truth, that which is most essential for our own sake. So inspiration always leads on to a life of service, even though it may challenge our assumptions about service. Guidance may guide us to cease to serve in a way that has now to be outgrown. Guidance may sometimes require of us what appears to be a pulling back from others, pulling back from the world. Guidance will take us step by step through stations, each one of which is different. We cannot point to one station and say, that is what guidance always teaches. One who is here, guidance will teach this. One who is there, guidance will teach that. Hence, guidance is continuously renewed in our lives. Always there is something more to be shown. And if ever we imagine that what we see now is the pinnacle, sooner or later our eyes will be opened. Because the path goes on just when one imagines one has found the halting place, the next leg of the journey unfolds. How good it is that we can travel together, can unite as we do here to offer companionship.